Hello and welcome to an Earth First radio special. Today we present the history of Earth First. This was presented around a campfire at the 2005 Round River Rendezvous in the Northern Cascades of Oregon. This program will be presented in four parts, and this segment is part one.
Welcome to Earth First History Storytelling, which is a participatory exercise of our story, not his story or her story, but our story. And we're missing our chronological person, Tony, which means that it's going to be grossly unchronological until he gets here. Tony and Jim Flynn and I have been doing this lately, and it's been kind of popular. But this is a whole new thing because we have other old-time Earth Firsters and other new Earth Firsters and other stories to share, so it'll be different every time we do it. So anyway, I just wanted to get it going because one of the last times we did it, it took 3 hours, and everybody was into it. So just in case it takes 3 hours, it might be good to start. So I was thinking I'd start by reading a poem, and the way this works with no chronology is when you think of a good action story, Earth First action story, or something really humorous that happened with Earth First, you know, you just jump in there. And if you want to hear us old timers go on and on, we can go on for hours, but it might be good to hear some of the newer stuff too. So I was going to read this poem, which is grossly out of order because otherwise later on I won't be able to read it because it won't be light enough. Since we're at a rendezvous, this is arbitrarily about the rendezvous we had. I'm looking for a date and I'm not finding any. In Arizona. What year was that, Karen? Thank you. See, other people are the chronology, not me. And then other people are the pronunciation for Apache also. So I called it Big Seated Mountain in Apache, and this may or may not give you an impression of what that rendezvous was like. Mount Graham. And that was more like 93, wasn't it? 93? Are you sure? Because I have another poem that was written for the 92 rendezvous. 92, okay. It was 93 because I wrote another rendezvous poem in 92. Okay.
This is going
to
make great radio, isn't it?
Okay. Okay, so anyway, we're arbitrarily saying this was 93. The name of the poem is in the name of the mountain, which was Big Seated Mountain. So hopefully you get an impression of what this rendezvous was like based on this poem. White clouds racing across deep blue, fast, steady as the light footsteps of the Apache runners, concentrating with each step all energy into the earth to heal her wounds. Vowing protection, asking guidance, spirit giving back to the source of all beings, earth returning strength up through runner's legs, so sweat drops unnoticed in the long climb, sacred earth objects giving strength through runner's hands, grasping rock and feathers, resistance and flexibility, the earth power felt by all exchanged in smiles. Scattered throughout the Sky Island forest, red squirrel leaps, gathers, nestles, and chatters, living ancient natural life, their dance of joy and death, as the cold metal helicopters whir louder and louder, National Guard with infrared sensors buzzing the squirrel's defenders, the mountain's defenders, as we slam dance the caribou polka, threaten their monopolies with our poems and songs, our hugs and unity and purpose spread across the meadow like wildflowers. Oppression nothing new to the Apache people, no longer new to us, born silently by the great spinning cycles of life. Last night our tree climbers were tracked and stopped, but there are more of us, more life in us, and we have time. Time and blood pulsing warm through our hearts. We don't just come together to passively watch a movie, to read the news digested for us. We come to dance beyond our shattered cultures, to reshape our tattered lives by living for more than ourselves, by breathing for the squirrel, by running for the first people, by climbing the mountain to protect her until glass flies in shards from the passive observatories, mimicking a deranged spectator society. The glass flies glinting in the hot sun, reflecting our elders, the trees, the animals, the sky, the people who grasp real life. The concrete crumbles back into dirt. The metal bars erode slowly back to rock from our prayers, our steps, and our hammers. So that's just to kick it off.
You've got an illustration of the poem, right? It must be getting old. We used to, when people would bring machines, like little generators and amplifier shit, out to the rendezvous at different places, or like Cove Mallard, when they tried, we were doing a celebration, we'd go and take their machines, their generators, and unplug them and throw them in the woods. And the Cove Mallard one was, I think it took us four times to finally decide to put it in a locked car. Because the first time we unplugged it, we go dash in the woods. This guy comes out of the house all drunk. Damn, he's cursing. And he falls flat on his face in the grass. And we're trying to like not laugh because we're hiding. And he finally finds a generator. And we do it like twice more. And he falls flat on his face each time cursing. We finally wanted to spare him. So we took the thing really far, found an open car, drew it in, locked it. We didn't know whose car it was. And then Robert Hoyt was playing. He was so pissed off. And he had this thing about wannabe Eagle Tours song because he didn't know who all did it. And he's like pissed off and doing this because he wanted to be on a stage and everybody's wanting to be in here. And it's only about this many of us. We just didn't like the stage and this generator making noise in the back, spewing gasoline. And Robert had to come down off the stage and we all got in a circle together. And it was really pretty cool. And that's why it's like we usually don't allow these things. But I guess we're still in a circle and we haven't burned it yet.
Since Karen started with a memory of the Mount Graham rendezvous, I thought I would do a little bit about the Vermont rendezvous, which is, by the way, where the Warrior Poets Society got its start. We had an action after the rendezvous where we went to Albany, New York, and put on a demo downtown because New York State was considering buying power from Hydro-Québec, entering into an agreement. What this would have meant was Hydro-Québec would put up a big dam on a river. Well, they did that once before. It turned the river into a lake, and caribou, which are this migrating deer and go by thousands and tens of thousands on their migration, are used to fording the river, swimming across and continuing on. Well, they swam across, and they swam, and they swam, and it got tighter and tighter, and finally 10,000 of them drowned. So what we decided to do was we had different groups where we were doing different things, but I wound up in the group where we decided we would reenact the caribou drowning. So we all stayed at this schoolhouse, I believe, overnight, and we got up in the morning and we went down and had like little bowls of granola and yogurt or something, and then we sat around making caribou masks out of dumpstered cardboard and little branches and string to hold it in the back, right? And then we all left in, of course, a herd and migrated the two or three blocks downtown to the public park where there was this big, big pool, right, that we were expecting. And by the time we got down there to the park, there was a polka band all scheduled there, and they were playing polkas. So what do we do? Well, you know, being Earth Firsters, we're flexible, so the caribou all got into polkaing with the polka band. So anyway, that's right after that, I decided I would write a little something to kind of commemorate that. And then the next rendezvous, I ran into Robert Hoyt on the trail. And I said, you know, Robert, I had this little thing I wrote with the polka beat in mind because of the thing that happened last summer. And, you know, I don't really know how to write a polka. And so he sat down with it and he said, yeah, I think we could make a polka out of this. So he sort of came up with the chorus and I wrote the words. So anyway, this is called the Caribou Polka. And you get to hear it sung. We went up to Albany trying to set some rivers free. Cancel contracts, that's a fact. We want the ecosystem back. At the State House, what do we hear? Polka music in our ear. We dance, it's no joke. Doing the caribou polka. Do the caribou polka, the caribou polka. A caribou is what I am. Do the caribou polka, the caribou polka, polka hole in the dam. We danced to the left and right, that music gave us appetite, grabbed our partners, dance around, mess up our migration ground. All at once the music stopped, right back down, again we dropped, exhausted we could croak, doing the caribou polka. Do the caribou polka, the caribou polka, a caribou is what I am. Do the caribou polka, the caribou polka, poke a hole in the dam. Once more the music did begin. We found we had our second win. Danced till sweat rolled off our backs. More fun than reciting facts. Angry at the gubs and flam, thinking about that dadgum dam. We gave ourselves a soca, doing the caribou polka. Do the caribou polka, the caribou polka. A caribou is what I am. Do the caribou polka, the caribou polka, poke a hole in the dam. The dam in place, we couldn't wait. We came here to migrate. Reflecting pool was in our way. Dam across it plain as day. Forded it and then we found we were blocked and so we drowned. Our bodies stank like smoke. No more caribou polka. Do the caribou polka, the caribou polka, a caribou is what I am. Do the caribou polka, the caribou polka, poke a hole in the dam. Of course it was all in fun, you might guess what else we done. All decided to revive, one by one we came alive. Spontaneous, it was no plan, poked a hole in that dam. Gave a victory croaker, and did the caribou polka. Do the caribou polka, the caribou polka, a caribou is what I am. Do the caribou polka, the caribou polka, poke a hole in the dam. Do the caribou polka, the caribou polka, a caribou is what I am. Do the caribou polka, the caribou polka, poke a hole in the dam. Do the caribou polka, the caribou polka, a caribou is what I am. Do the caribou polka, caribou polka, poke a hole in the dam. Poke a hole in the dam. Poke a hole in the dam.
I don't know what year it was, and I don't know who was involved because it was a long time ago, and I just heard the second hand, but it's always been kind of one of my favorite actions, which is Wild Rockies Earth First was really frustrated with what was going on with predator management. So they went up to Fish and Wildlife Regional Headquarters with fishing rods and hooks and butterfly nets. The bait they put on their hooks was money. And they walked around the halls of regional fish and wildlife and were trolling for bureaucrats so that they could catch them in their nets and put radio collars on them.
We did an action that was one of my favorites, but was very not popular at the time and certainly wouldn't be done now. But after the 92 organizers conference, which for those people who remember, it was an incredibly, incredibly ugly organizers conference. It's the one where Judy quit. And there was this big problems with the Montana staff, and the solution was Mike Rozelle. I don't know what that was all about. Anyway, it was a very contentious organizers conference, but we had planned this action in advance, as we had planned the conference so carefully. We planned this action. We made all these costumes in advance, and the costumes were barrels of dynamite. And we got these herb barrels, those cardboard herb barrels, and we, you know, put wicks on them and paint them red and put TNT on the side. And we made like 20 of them, and we thought people would really like this. And then we made a big matchstick, and we did our press work, and we go to the Bonneville Dam. And we go in, the Army Corps of Engineers, nobody's waiting for us or anything, Army Corps of Engineers Visitor Center, you know, people are there in their outfits, and they're like, as we all file in, dressed like dynamite, you know? And they don't really know what to do, and we don't really know what to do. So, but one of our people thinks quick and hands this guy in uniform the match. And that really was our message for the day, was that the Corps should take the dam out. We weren't advocating vigilantism. We were advocating that the Corps take the dam out. And we made that clear in all our press. And the minute that guy takes the match, boy, the cameras go off, and he's like, huh, and hands it back. And then they just didn't know what to do. I mean, there's like three of them there, and we're all nice and friendly. We just happen to be dressed like dynamite, and we all, like, go upstairs, and we're touring the dam dressed like dynamite. And we're setting charges. Like, we'd all go gather around a pole, and somebody would run around with dynamite. you know, and we'd hold the match, we'd take pictures of ourselves, and we'd go to the fish ladder and do the same thing. And I just love that action. I thought it was great. Oh, yeah, well, we did another action at Bonneville Dam where we went to their tour. They've got a little mini tour. It's at a different part of the dam. This is up on top and stuff. So, but they also have this other area down low where they have a tour, and you can see the facilities and how they manipulate the salmon as they come through and how they cut them open and take their eggs and all this incredible management of the salmon that they do. So they have this whole tour. So we went there, and we wrote down and took pictures of all their tour stops, you know, and then we came up with our own literature and our own tour guides. And we went on a totally different weekend, and we, you know, just set up there. And on that one, we also had street theater. So we did the tour thing, so we'd lead people through the tour and hand them literature, and they'd be like, you know, and that worked pretty well. But we also had this this big salmon that Slug Thing had made, this monstrous, like, four-people salmon. And four-person salmon costume, and then the Grim Reaper. And each part of the salmon was like hatcheries and predation, and the Grim Reaper would walk up and slice the salmon. And it's very dramatic, very Andrew. But another thing I remember about one of the other of those actions, I'm not sure which, but you know how they do those teasers on the TV news, what's coming after the commercial? They said, Earth First back! And they're taking on salmon after this.
We just had this thing over there with a memorial to Craig Benville. Craig was a very close part of me, and so this is a tad troublesome, but back in 1995, 10 years back, we were at a regional rendezvous in Canada. It was on Chilliwack Lake. And a bunch of Canadians apparently said something like, which of you Yanks wants to get arrested? Craig and I, who used to get into trouble quite a bit before he got respectable and became a journalista, Craig looked at me and said, and I said, "Woo, yeah, of course." So without knowing what the hell we were volunteering for, we all of a sudden became the post-Rondi action for the 1995 British Columbia rendezvous. The action turned out to be taking over this flagpole, but to say flagpole is to, like, call Luna a tree. This flagpole was frigging immense, and when Craig said, we can do this, Craig wasn't a climber. Craig had really been only briefed in the art of climbing once before at some prospective forest circus action with Mike Meese and a bunch of people out at Cove Mallard. He didn't really know what he was up to, and none of us knew what the hell this flagpole looked like that we're actually volunteering to do the job. The thing was immense. It was the largest flagpole in, I'm not sure, either all of the Western Hemisphere or British Columbia or maybe Surrey. But anyway, it was 287 feet tall, and it was the size at the butt, like, I mean, it was immense. It was huge. You had to first get through a grill work that was laid around the base, and there was a little hatch there. You had to get the lock off of that, and then you went down into this bilge and unlocked another door that accessed the interior of the first part of this flagpole that was probably, I mean, it was immense. It was like a fucking redwood. First, you know, we said, yeah, we'll do this. We were thinking we're going to girth hitch up this thing. And then we decided to go scout the site. And it's like, no, we're not. There's no way into this whole action aside from accessing this grill. So I go down and I pick up a humongous pair of bolt cutters. I think, unfortunately, they were made in a country where they're not paid enough. We know we have to go through the grill and drop in there and get our message up the flagpole through the interior. We're not going to climb the outside of this thing. My support team, who might remain anonymous, depending on how much they weigh their arms, drove us up to this thing. It's this huge flagpole that's planted right next to the street in the middle of a used automobile dealership. We go across the lot with a big 3-foot pair of bolt cutters tucked under my trench coat off to do this thing, and it is the most obnoxious high-security lock you have ever seen in your life. And we're going, and the jaws on the bolt cutter are denting. All of a sudden, one of my support team, who will remain anonymous unless they wave their arms around a lot, says, uh-oh. And I'm going, oh, God, security. And I turn around and I look up, and yes, indeed, it's an elderly gentleman in a funny uniform shirt and a big bunch of keys on his side. He says, I thought I gave you the key to this a couple of weeks ago. He thinks we're there to change the flag, because believe me, at about 300 feet up, you know, this thing whips, wah, and, you know, the end of the fabric comes loose and it looks ugly. And after a while, the Canadians get embarrassed and, you know, somebody else goes up this thing. But I'm sure that will unlock both this lock and that lock down there. I'm assuming these high security locks run in series, and he hands me the keys, loses his job immediately. I open the door, drop inside, open the next door. Craig falls into the bilge water. My support team, who will remain anonymous unless they wave their arms around a lot, quickly slips our lock on the hatch just as he's realizing that what's sticking out of my bag doesn't look at all like the Canadian flag. In fact, it's more like black and white instead of red and white. And so we go up the interior of this old-growth flagpole. And we get to the crow's nest, which is 200 feet up. Have I explained to you that Craig doesn't climb very well? And we don't have 200 feet of rope. We've got rope that we're going to have to tie together, and then I'm going to have to tell Craig how to rappel down, get off of his figure eight. But in any case...
Oh, we might have figured out who the support crew was.
In any case... We go up the interior of this humongous, this thing looks like something out of a Jerry Bruckheimer movie. It's big. It's fat. There's this interesting metal stairway up the interior. You know, it's tiresome. And Craig is covered in bilge water. But we are free and clear from the security officer who has just lost his job. And we are going up the interior. And we get to the crow's nest. And this thing opens like a submarine hatch. You know, this big... open it up like that. And there's a kind of complimentary lever on the top that is really big and iron and, you know, like, whoo, chunk. Oh, it's great. If you ever got into submarine movies, you know what I'm talking about. This is like... whop. So we're on this crow's nest at 200 feet. I've got this huge anti-trophy hunting banner. Stop trophy hunting. BC Earth First. Nobody involved in this is from BC. But it's okay. They ask us about that later. I couldn't explain it really. But anyway, here's us Yanks up there. And then I shimmy up the rest of this thing, which has got a little more reasonable in girth. I can do a girth hitch up it and, you know, get up there. And there's this skyscraper next to me. And it's got this, I don't know, there's the hallway, except it's a vertical hallway. And there's all these windows. And there's people coming out of each level to take pictures of the silly Yank on the flagpole across the street. I'm waving at them while at the same time my hands are cramping because I'm stressing because this frigging flagpole is 300 feet up and it's going... Whoa. I don't trust human-made objects that much. This is made probably by a low bidder and shit like that. So, you know, a 300-foot tree is one thing, but something that the humans have done I'm a little concerned about. I'm waving at the office personnel in the skyscraper next door. And we get this banner dropped. It's been made the night before, and it's got these sleeves in it. It's a big, long, vertical banner, and it's got sleeves to stabilize it. And inside each of these sleeves is a big piece of PVC. It's about 5 feet long. But because this was like last-minute operation, the ends of the sleeves haven't been closed. So I get up at about 280 feet. By now, the BC police are fully aware of our presence, and they're in large number down below throughout the used car lot. I unfurl the banner, and as it goes, whoo, it turns vertically in its spin, and one of the big pieces of PVC goes... and rockets down like the sword of Damocles. I'm thinking, shit, I've just gone from civil disobedience and trespass to manslaughter. Craig goes, ah! It gets out of the way, and it goes past him and creams into the street in a massive explosion of thick Schedule 40 PVC all over the place. I am immensely relieved that no Mounties were involved. But I'm still very concerned, and sure enough, as it continues to unfurl, the next piece, I mean, the top piece has remained in place, thank God. But there's three of them, top, middle, bottom. The next one comes loose, and it goes down, too, and it bangs off of the railing of this huge crow's nest that surrounds this thing like a redwood tree sit. And part of it goes down, but it also, fortunately, doesn't impact anything other than pavement. I didn't even ding a police car, or at least not from what we heard later. Anyway, I managed to get Craig to send me back up the remainder of this thing, and we stick it back in and stabilize the banner. We got this huge banner that's up here going, stop trophy hunting. And it's aimed at whatever the Canadian version of the Fish and Wildlife Department is. And they're having a look at this. And then we come down onto the crow's nest, and we're all getting sunburned. And, well, it's great. It's a glorious day. But we're still dealing with the climbing problem. Like, Craig doesn't climb. And we don't have enough rope to get him to the bottom without some serious instruction that if he fucks up, you're going to hang there for a while, guy. But there's these buckets here, and they're all containing a bunch of shit that looks an awful lot like climbing rope, and I'm all of a sudden thinking that this is what they use to lower their scaffolding with. So, shit, kick this over the side, and sure enough, it goes all the way down to the bottom, and Craig is relieved of all responsibility of learning new tricks, and we both get the screaming rappel off of this thing. If you ever get into rappelling, let me tell you, a 200-foot rappel, it really doesn't get a whole lot better than that without ending badly. So Craig goes, woo, and he's great. And he gets down, of course, the Canadian police understand very little about friction and reach up to grab his rappel device and hurt themselves. Then I get on the rope and I go, woo! There was video of that. Oh, by the way, did I say my support team took off about the first piece of PVC that hit the pavement? They said, oh, god damn, and you know, they were gone. Anyway, I come down, and of course, the Mounties reach up and burn their fingers again. I say, watch out, this is hot. And yeah, it sure is. And so ultimately, the upshot of it was, after questioning us as to why the hell there weren't any Canadians involved, actually, I said, they just ran faster than we did. We all got a free trip back to the border, and after a while, Craig and I became enemies of the crown. I might never get an anarchy charge against me, but I am proud to have joined Craig in enemies of the crown status. And after that, finally, they gave up on the whole procedure. We wouldn't return for trial. That was the problem. That's why they finally gave up on us and called us bad people. They sent us our ropes and our harnesses and our carabiners and everything else back. So, God bless the Queen. Anyway, I just wanted that to be said for the banner. Oh, before we ejected, Craig went over with a winch handle and jammed it into this nifty submarine hatch they had there. And because no climber will ever climb a rope that somebody else has set, unless they're really, really trusting. And of course, we're activist freaks, so nobody wanted to climb up the rope we came down. This banner, we kept calling up. Is the banner still there? Why, yes, the banner's still there. The British Columbia government had to rent the biggest frigging crane in the world to come and finally remove this thing 2 weeks later. So this lasted a long time, but as far as I am concerned, for an action that was ill-planned and star-crossed and security came up on us, I gotta say, sometimes, you know, shit rolls out, and it was a great time, and I hope you all have as good a time as I had on that one. I know this was a long time ago, but anyway.
You've been listening to a special production of Earth First Radio. I'm your host, Uncle Dennis. Thank you for listening. No compromise in defense.